Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
She was very kind in letting me play golf, and I'm still feeling guilty today.
Okay, but you had a nice dinner.
We had a great dinner. Thank you.
It would have been nice if you had called.
I feel like we charged it back to you.
Don't worry.
I'm unclear on this. Would you have liked them to call you?
I would have.
So, Michael, on the not calling Tony front, what was up with that?
Yeah. I mean, it was her birthday. Why wouldn't you call
her? Yes, why wouldn't you say, you know who I need to call? My dad.
It does seem odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
See, celebrity's bad. When your life is revealed to the public, it's bad. It's bad. I try to tell this to people. Plausibly live. And from an undisclosed location on the third floor in Chevy Chase, Maryland, we are on the air with Liz Clark and Gary Braun and Michael Kornheiser. Nigel is going to run the board, do the news. Barry's Verluga will talk to us later, and we will tap Liz's brain on the draft, the upcoming draft, which I believe starts on Thursday night. They'll have the first round.
Correct.
Thursday night. What city is it in this
Philly.
Year? It's in Philly.
It is in
it's
Philly.
Been in New York. It's been in Chicago. They moved the first round around, which is fine.
Will they have a jail below the draft?
Yes.
It should be entertaining in Philly.
Always. The booing should be fantastic. I will just briefly open with the Nats. I did not watch. It started too late for me.
8:40, right?
It's just too late for me. I told you yesterday the Nats had no chance of winning that game. Yeah. I told you that after a rigorous and murderous travel schedule, where you've played 6 road games in a row, and they schedule you for a Sunday night game, knowing that you have to play in Colorado within the next 24 hours. It's insane. Mm-hmm. They had no chance of winning the game. They were up 4-3 in the sixth inning.
4-1.
Promptly lost.
But they were down 1-0 for the early stretch of the game, and they got a gift home run, and I think at that point they thought they might be able to carry it forward.
And Romero gave up a home run, and they lost 8-4.
Trying to throw a little gas on the fire.
Didn't get anybody out, right?
He pitched 1/3.
He's terrible. Good. Well, how much do you need to see?
How much? The question
is,
looking at his lines, after a third of an inning with 6 hits and 3 earned given up, no strikeouts.
How much do you need?
I think that's
how long is the road back?
Just leave him there.
Yikes.
Leave him in Colorado. It's closer to the West Coast where you can put him on the boat.
Right.
When does he punch his locker?
And break his thumb and then he's out.
60-day deal,
it's terrible. So, all right. So, the major thing in town for the Washington, D.C. area last night was a playoff game in which the Wizards fell in Atlanta for the second straight time. For those of you, don't panic. The Wizards easily won the 2 games in Washington. The Wizards have the home court advantage and will get 2 more games in Washington if it goes 7. But it's 2-2 now. And the Wizards did particularly poorly, and I watched this, much of it. And then I switched over and watched episode 4 of Brockmeyer because I'm now hooked on that show. Although I don't think they should have brought the wife back that early in the show in the first season. I thought that was a mistake. In any case, the Wizards did very poorly in the second quarter and the fourth quarter. They were outscored 65-39 in the quarters that would be considered critical in close games. I mean, you can run away and hide if you're up 25 at the half.
Got out to a big start.
They did.
Big first
they
quarter.
65-39. Gortat and Morris gave them nothing but his fat yap, in which he said of Paul Millsap, instead of him, he called him a crybaby. At the end of the game, Millsap had 19 points and 9 rebounds, and Morris had 9 points and 4 rebounds and gave the Wizards nothing.
7 assists, too, for Millsap.
Marcin Gortat gave them nothing offensively. He rebounded well. He had 18 rebounds. But he gave them basically no points. And Dwight Howard had 16 and 15, and Gortat had 2 and 18. And the rebounds are fine. But 2 points, you can't have 2 of your starters, getting a total of 11 points and playing a lot of minutes. Can't have that. John Wall, who was the key to the game, John Wall got 22 points and 10 assists, and that's fine, but it's not good enough. Not in the playoffs. It's simply not good enough. It really isn't. What did you think?
I think you have to play at both ends of the floor. Bradley Beal, also a key to the game with 32 points.
He had a lot of points.
But a conscientious objector
down
the stretch.
Doesn't play defense.
On defense.
He's the guy who's always talking about the lack of defense, and he's the guy who doesn't play any defense.
The Gortat thing is astonishing to me because 18 rebounds.
It's a lot.
One or two of them's going to be offensive, presumably, and you're going to be kind of near the basket. I mean, he only shot 4 times. So,
What are you doing?
We talked yesterday about, and you saw Golden State do it last night, just completely blitzkrieg Portland. We talked about with Wilbon about what these experienced teams do. I mean, the fact that Cleveland went out there and quickly disposed of Indiana, it was not easy. Okay, those games, all four games, I think, were decided by a total of 16 points.
The lowest amount in the history of a four-game sweep.
But they took care of business, and that's what these teams that are championship teams, that are serious about it, that understand how the playoff works, do. What the Wizards do is what everyone else in the playoffs does. They win at home, and they'll win the series. They'll win a seven-game series. I mean, I would like to think they will win. Is it tomorrow? Yeah, tomorrow night's game five, and then perhaps go win in Atlanta. But these playoff series don't start till someone wins on the other floor. I don't think the Wizards are in any sort of trouble. I mean,
Nor do I.
Yeah.
Nor do I.
But it is disappointing.
What do you got?
I even watched this because I figured it was Hoburk.
Yeah.
I don't know that they got this. I mean, I came away thinking this is pretty tenuous just because of the indifference to defense. I don't see how you know, with this streaky scoring and production as they had, sort of a two-man show there, I don't see how you win, you know, without a more intense defensive effort. So, I don't know. It just seemed a little too casual.
Atlanta's not a good team. Dwight Howard isn't anywhere near the player he was 10 years ago. No. They don't have anybody that scares you.
They don't have a great player.
Really don't. And the Wizards allegedly have two great players. And the Wizards, you know... This means John Wall goes home and says to himself, okay, I've got to score 35 points and I've got to have 15 assists or we're not going to win.
You know,
that's dangerous.
And it's not sustainable.
That's dangerous
because
he's got the ball in his hands all the time, trying to do things all the time, and we've been to that movie. That doesn't really work.
Well, what they do, Atlanta, or at least what they've done these last two games, is they do defend. I mean, Schroeder's been defending Wall baseline to baseline. You know, and I think
he was out a lot of the game because he had 3,000. 3,000 in the first quarter, no points in the first quarter, finished with 18. They had seven people in double figures.
But
part
of the issue is, and I agree with you that, you know, Wall may go home and say, oh my God, I guess I got to score 35. But the answer isn't to score more. We've said this all year. The answer is to stop them more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're still giving up 111 points. You don't do that and win much in the playoffs
in
the NBA.
That's right. So did you enjoy it? I mean, you haven't watched a basketball game in a long time.
No, I did enjoy it. I just don't see this being a sustained narrative that's going to unite the city and excite the city for very long.
Well, the first two
games... You've got them out.
Kind of.
Yeah. You don't have the Caps out, though.
No. There's something... You know, although... The second series
Pittsburgh.
Is not a good
it's
one
tough.
For
that's
them.
Tough.
At
yeah.
home,
that's just
though,
bad luck.
Liz, the Wiz looked dominant at home, although they were far too chesty. We talked about that, too.
That's right.
In my opinion, they
that's
were
right.
too chesty.
Well,
Markieff
Morris.
Anybody who's throwing out the crybaby stuff.
He needs to shut
this
up.
This is not the time.
Right. He's not an all-star. He's not very good.
Well, he
needs
is now,
to shut up.
He is, in fairness, Tony, now a four-game veteran of the NBA playoffs.
Yeah,
well, that's true.
Yeah,
that's very true.
You mentioned the Warriors. In other news in the NBA, the Warriors crushed Portland last night.
They scored 45 in the
it
first quarter.
28-5. It was 28-5 at one point.
I think it was
43-16 at the end of the quarter.
Oh, my Lord.
72-48 at the half. Now, it's going to get harder.
Sure.
Because Steve Kerr, we don't know. I mentioned this. I took Kelleher's line yesterday and used it on PTI. I'd rather have Tiger Woods' back right now than Steve Kerr's. Kerr can't coach because he can't sit on the bench and pop up and down. He can go to practices.
Uh-huh.
He can be in the locker room. He was last night. He's with the team, but he can't coach.
Game plans, presumably.
He can do
right?
all of that, but he's not sitting on the bench and coaching.
Yeah.
And Mike Brown's going to do that, and they responded very well. They won by a million points, but second round's going to be harder, and a third round's going to be harder than that. And we'll see what happens. Steve Kerr's this looks like, and I think you'd have to say this potentially, this is the end of his career, right? I mean, if his back is this bad over this sustained a period of time, he can't do the travel, he can't do the
really
jumping up and down to coach.
Yeah,
he's not Jerry West. But he's had great success in everything ever done in basketball, sure. including broadcasting.
Yes. And it's, you know, the beginning to me, the beginning arc of his coaching career, of, you know, of that phase of his life to write a new chapter. Young guy, young at this. It's really so sad.
No, this is the arc is Pat Riley. You come out of the booth, mm-hmm. you go into coaching, and you're great right away.
Yeah.
You have great
yeah.
players, but you make great players even greater.
Yeah.
You know.
Well,
so.
He and Kerr GM'd before he coached.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So
not that great, though. He made that trade in Phoenix for Shaquille O'Neal, which hurt them.
Yeah.
I mean, it made sense at the time when you looked at it, but it actually hurt the team. I think when Shaquille got to Phoenix, it was one of his many times where he decided
forgot he'd been there.
He would have an operation, you know,
three days before
the season and sit out for the first 4 months because right. they owed him that. So you and Michael played golf yesterday, Gary.
We did. Michael and I went and played Whiskey Creek at the Flying Dog tournament. Some shout outs to a couple of littles. Scott, I forget his last name, Scott, but is the
director of sales Wisdom. And marketing.
Scott, right. Scott Lynn?
No.
Scott director of sales and marketing at Whiskey Creek.
Yes. 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 Big fan of the pod. Was very happy to see us out there. And we played with my friends, Tara McCarthy. Tara's the biz dev director at Page Sutherland Architecture. And Brett Snyder, my friend who's the owner of Wardaka Brewery, which you've heard us talk about. And we played. Since Tara was technically our host, I gave her Michael because the format was a two-man shamble. It was a format I had not played where...
It was very confusing for both of our twosomes. You would both tee off, you would choose uh-huh. the better ball, and then you'd both play your individual ball into the hole.
Right, except for the par fives where you would sort of play from a captain's choice for two shots.
Right, but most of the par fives were reachable, so we...
Yeah, they had us playing up front.
Yeah, we were playing the shorter tee, so we were greenside.
So how did you do?
Tara and I were two under. It was hard to make putts. I will say this. Tara hits a great drive. She was crushing it over 200 on the back nine.
Ooh, that's way
she can hit the ball.
But I was playing from forward tee, so a lot of times we were within 60 yards and you're choosing a flip wedge for me versus Tara's shot from the fairway, which, you know, might have given us a fuller shot in, but you still sort of choose the distance over that accuracy.
I mean, you know this. He's your son. You've played with him now for close to 20 years.
We sometimes talk on the phone.
Yeah.
there were occasions where I thought, when driving the ball, he actually broke the golf ball. Like, he hits it so hard and so far. I mean, it's, you know, it's emasculating that you will, 3-4 times around, I might crush a drive and hit it straight, and I would feel good about myself, except that 40 yards out beyond me is another one. It was a joy to watch him play, and I don't think... I mean, I'm not saying this as a bust. I think he would say he probably didn't play his best. I mean, it was a little sloppy. The rain, it was cooperative.
Yeah, what about the rain?
Rain stayed away until about the last hour.
We were very lucky. It was overcast and cool. Very nice conditions to play. Not hot, not cold. But the greens were a little slow just based on all of the rain over the last week, which makes sense. You have to protect the golf course, particularly when you're going to have high 80s and even close to 90s this weekend. But it was tough to make those 8 to 12 birdie putts that you need to make in this kind of format. And once you miss one or two of those, you're sort of always in the back of your head saying, I got to get this to the hole.
Yeah.
And then you go, you know, you're missing your line, hitting it through.
So what were, did everybody get prizes? I imagine everybody got beer.
There was plenty of Flying Dog beer to go around. They had a total tap takeover, I guess they're calling it these days. It didn't, I don't think any of us were in the money.
We were not close to the
prize. We were a little late coming in. I think people, because maybe we finished about 14, 15 holes and then it started to rain pretty moderately. And I think some people said, okay, well,
that's
enough.
It. We're done.
Yeah.
We're
and
done.
It was, I mean, the last hole clubs were slipping out of hands.
Yeah.
And
this
stuff.
Was
I mean,
a full
not for
bag
Michael,
soaking.
Yeah, yeah. So that's not good.
But
all
we had
right.
fun.
By the way, I checked the paper today in an effort to prepare for this show.
Yeah.
I checked the paper. Do you know the record of the Washington Valor in the Arena Football League?
Oh, no, but I know that they exist.
I'm going to guess 2 games. I'm going to say 2 games is the record.
What is their
what
record?
What is the record?
I'd say 1-1, 0-2, 2-0, 1-1.
Okay. They are 1-1. I didn't know the league started. I had no idea it started. Has this been publicized? Maybe I was away.
Yes.
Has the Arena Football League, did you even?
I knew that they existed.
Right, I knew they
existed. And then their name. I knew that they started.
They have nice helmets.
It's some of the broadcasts for either the Wizards or the Caps they've talked about. Well, now they've got to get it changed over for the Valor. So I remember hearing them talk about that sometime in the last couple of weeks.
Did you know?
I did know because there's some people I play golf with who say there's a great deal. You can get end zone seats with all you can eat and drink within that field range for $50.
Oh, family friend. Friendly.
So you ought to do that.
Yes. Yeah. Call up and ask for that deal.
Okay.
And you call all up. You can eat is never the right choice.
I couldn't name any
choice.
Of the players.
Anywhere.
No, I can't name the players.
Do they have a chocolate fountain down there as well?
You could only hope.
All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, Barry's Verluga will join us and catch us up on a whole bunch of teams that he's been watching. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Okay, this is the Harry's ad. Nigel has the razor. I have the razor. Gary has the razor. Michael has the razor.
You gave me a razor.
Well, how is it?
Well, it's lovely. And I don't think they push the chick angle quite enough. It's, yeah, they need to promote that.
It's okay.
It's chick-friendly.
So you're happy with it.
I am.
Okay.
And I don't get a lot of graft out of this. But, you know, but yeah, you know, I don't want the golf balls. I don't want the Dewars or whatever it is you drink, blue something.
Johnny, you don't need that.
Alan drinks that. You never get gifts I want. Back in the day, you got some Kind bars that were very exciting to me.
Right. Yeah. But this was good.
Yeah.
This worked out.
But just for the record, what would you like when you say he doesn't get anything that you would
like? Yeah, what would you
like?
Greek yogurt.
Greek yogurt's good.
Nice. Okay. No.
You got get sponsored by Greek yogurt. Fantastic.
Doesn't travel well, but we got
be great.
Well, this, sadly for Liz, is the Harry's ad, though she does have Harry's and she uses it and likes it. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profit at the expense of its customers. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality. They bought their own blade factory. By taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price, just $2 a blade, compared to the $4 or more you will pay at the drugstore. Harry's is so confident that you will love their blades, they're giving you their trial set for free. All you need to do is cover the $3 in shipping. And a trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. That's a $13 value for you to try. So stop messing around. Get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. $13 value for free. Just cover the shipping. To get your free trial set, including the razor handle, the 5-blade cartridge, and the shaving gel, go to Harry's, HARRYS.com, /Tony K. You have to write in Tony K, I believe. That's Harry's.com.
I think you just
/yell it. Tony K. Can you just yell it at
just,
the screen?
Yeah, just yell at the screen.
Scream Tony K.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Clark Schwab of Atlanta, Georgia. This is an old band of his, QLM. Nigel, what is the name of this song? It's a French name?
The name of this song is, it's called You're What the French Called Les Incompetents.
So that's just a long name.
Yes.
I mean, we like the music, but that's a really long name.
It's the second French song we've had, because we had another one that says Fetchez la Vache, or something like that, which is Throw the Cow.
Throw the Cow?
Yes. So,
So I like this.
I like it, too.
I like Clark Schwab, and I like QLM. They play in Barry's Verluga, who is all over the place. He's got to know about the Redskins, and he's got to know about the Nats, and he's got to know about the Caps, and he's got to know about the Wizards. And we're going to start on the Caps because that is probably the headline so far in the playoffs. Caps finally win a series, beat Toronto in an extraordinarily close series in which every game of the six is a one-goal game, in which 5 of them go to overtime, but in which the Caps win the last 3 in a row. They do what you're supposed to do. What are your thoughts on the Caps right now?
Well, that's basically it. I mean, for all the haranguing down 2-1, and there should have been haranguing down 2-1 because, you know, they're the best team in hockey this year, and they're supposed to advance, and they're supposed to get the better of a kind of a young upstart Toronto team. But in the end, they did what they're supposed to do, and they did it in pretty businesslike fashion. They were unlike, I think, teams from the past, and I don't say this as a predictor of anything to come, but unlike Caps teams of the past, when they faced a situation that was unexpected, being down after three games, they just kind of looked at it, took it step by step, won the next three games, did not get extended to a seventh game in the first round, which they might, you know, they could have won, but you really don't want to leave it to that kind of coin toss. They've been bitten by that in the past. And, you know, if you watch the hockey playoffs and you get invested in the hockey playoffs and you're invested in the Capitals, you have to have some sort of comfort level with a randomness factor that I don't think kind of applies to, certainly doesn't really apply to the NBA. It can apply to baseball because you can get a pitcher.
Pitchers,
who,
yeah.
You know, really controls everything. But there's nothing like hockey where you can really, you know, control play for the majority of time and still lose a 2-1 game. So the Capitals felt that that had happened to them. They trudged forward. They have now advanced, and that's really all you could have asked of them when the playoffs began.
Let me get to a very specific question. The health of Alexander Ovechkin, what are people saying about that?
Well, I mean, the Russian machine never breaks is basically what they're saying. I mean, he has... I don't know exactly what went into the play at the end of the first period in Game 5 here in Washington when, you know, I was sitting there in the press box teeing up a column about how the Capitals were going to have to try to make it through the playoffs without the franchise's face. It looked to me like he was probably going to be out, and then, of course, he was out for the start of the second period. He gets criticized nationally, and when you talk nationally in hockey, you're talking about Canada and the United States, and really Canada, because that's where the hockey opinions are formed and made and are really best informed. He gets criticized for his lack of production in the playoffs, which is an interesting thing considering of all the active players, he averages the most goals per playoff game. It's like a half a goal per playoff game. He scores every other game. His line right now, which is old standby Nicklas Backstrom and TJ Oshie, who at any point can be the most exciting player on the ice, is flying. They really are playing well. He looks really kind of rejuvenated. In the overtime period in game six, you know, as I said, hockey is not always a just world. Well, the Capitals dominated the 6.5 minutes of that overtime and were in fact rewarded. Even though Marcus Johansson got the goal and that line created the goal, Ovechkin's line was on the ice and was fairly dominant in that time and really carried play. And I think it's just a great time to he's playing well. There aren't all these questions about why aren't you scoring? Why aren't you scoring even strength? For him to go up against his old adversary, his contemporary, his, you know, kind of Bird versus Magic and Sidney Crosby. It's a really, really compelling series.
All right, so let me get to this, because Pittsburgh is scary. The winner of this series will be the odds-on favorite to win the Stanley Cup, because they are 1-2, 3, 4, and 5 are already out. They are 1-8 in their careers, the Washington Capitals franchise, 1-8. In the playoffs against Pittsburgh. A lot of them happened a long time ago, but last year isn't a long time ago. Last year is essentially the same squads. So how do you see this?
Well, I mean, I think that all hangs over it. It has to hang over it. For the fan bases, the 1-8 thing hangs over it. And you're right. It's not just like something that they can dismiss in the locker room and say, well, that doesn't really apply to us, because this is who ended their season in overtime in Game 6 in Pittsburgh last year. And I'd go back. I mean, you know, I lumped Backstrom in with Ovechkin because they are such core pieces. They also have a loss to Pittsburgh in a seventh game on home ice several years ago. This is the team. This team has two cups in the Crosby era. It has four cups overall. The Capitals obviously have zero cups in the Ovechkin era and zero cups overall. I think there's a lot of hand-wringing, and I understand this, about, well, how come the two best teams are meeting in the conference semifinals?
That's stupid.
And honestly, it you know, this whole idea that Ovechkin is a huge choker because he has not gotten his team past the second round of the playoffs, that would not be an element that we talked about if the NHL playoffs were set up where the best two teams were aligned to face each other in the conference finals, regardless of what division they played in, because they would have met Pittsburgh in the conference finals last year instead of in the second round. They have to go through Pittsburgh to win the cup. It doesn't, at some level, now, later, who really cares? This is the series that they have to figure out a way to win. I do think that they are better than they were last year, and I do think that the thing that that helped Pittsburgh win that series last year was kind of overall team speed. Well, the Capitals just dealt with a Toronto team that, while not as experienced and savvy and all of that, was probably faster than Pittsburgh, just young and spry and really lively. I think that was excellent preparation for what they're about to face. Pittsburgh team is not completely healthy. The Capitals are almost completely healthy, other than Carl Alsner. If there's going to be a time, this feels like the time.
That's what I think, too. So we'll see. Let me shift gears to the Nats. And let me ask you this question to begin with, and I was railing about this yesterday. How do you schedule a team for an 8 o'clock Sunday night game in the middle of a 10-day, 10-game road trip, and then put them on the road to Colorado overnight, which is a 4-hour plane ride at least, and have them play the next evening? Who makes that schedule for
the
Nets?
It's crazy. It's not appropriate. And there's subtle things in there too, where this is a 3-city 10-day trip, and their other getaway day, the travel day, was after a 7:30 p.m. start in Atlanta. So normally you want that 1 p.m. or 4 p.m. start.
Sure.
When you're traveling, because, I mean, people don't want to hear about the complaints of millionaires, and I get that, but when you're asked to perform your job, when you land in Colorado at 4 or 5 in the morning and the sun is starting to come up and you're supposed to sleep and then play a professional baseball game, that's a lot to ask. There are a lot of instances like this. Last year there were San Francisco played night games at the Mets and a night game somewhere else on the East Coast, I can't remember, and then was supposed to play at home the next day. I mean, it seems to me that, and I know the union is not happy about those kinds of things. They're trying to work it out. I don't know why it develops that way. It didn't used to be that way. It used to be you played a road trip, and it wasn't Atlanta, New York, Colorado. It was San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco,
that's
go
right.
home.
That's
you know,
right.
Arizona,
that's right.
Colorado. These make no sense.
All right, so and they lost, and in a predictable way, as far as I'm concerned, they've lost.
Yeah.
They have dumped Blake Treinen, but have they settled on Glover or Kelly? Do they have a closer at the moment?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I do think that Dusty Baker's thinking right out of the gate, and this makes the most sense, I'm going to go with Kelly over Glover if they're on equal rest because he's the more senior person. Well, he's now had Glover out there twice.
Yes.
The first time because Kelly had pitched on consecutive days, and this, he's a double Tommy John surgery guy. You're not going to roll him out there 3 days in a row. I think that with performance, as he builds a resume, they will be more likely to roll out Glover if he's successful, because his stuff is better. We've talked about kind of his moxie and attitude. He has the kind of cocky / confidence that you want in a closer. I also think that, you know, this story has not been fully written. It's April 20, whatever it is, and they are rolling along with the best record in the majors, and all the other pieces seem to be in place. The lineup is performing. The rotation is performing as expected. If there's a piece that Mike Rizzo can go get to augment this situation, I would expect that to happen too. This has a lot of feeling of this is, you know, there are a lot of ducks in a row here. We need to make sure that every single last duck is in a row. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're sitting here in July and they have somebody else back there to help out as well.
You've written extensively about the Nats over a long period of time since they became the Nats, pretty much. And the one constant since they became the Nats is Ryan Zimmerman. Ryan Zimmerman, at the end of last year, is someone who did not look like a major leaguer. Ryan Zimmerman was the collateral damage when Joe Maddon walked Bryce Harper 20,000 times. It brought up Ryan Zimmerman with men on base 20,000 times, and he did not deliver, and he did not look like a major leaguer for the rest of the season. He looks great now. What in God's name happened to him? Because that's important.
It's hugely important for exactly the reason you said, and we've already seen a little bit of the importance because when the
he's now batting fourth, can split up lefty-lefty. Yeah.
Correct, which is how it was designed last year until Zimmerman was so bad that Baker had no choice but to put Harper and Murphy, the two lefties, back-to-back. I am not blaming Ryan Zimmerman's performance for Bryce Harper's down year, but you can't say that it wasn't a factor. Harper went into that Cubs series in May kind of riding high. They walked him, as you said, a million times, and Zimmerman failed in every instance.
Every time.
But there were little hidden things, and people, I mean, I've talked to Zimmerman about this. I think he frankly got sick of hearing it. There were little peripheral stats that indicated that Zimmerman was not quite as bad as his back of the baseball bat, back of the baseball card stats said. He was hitting the ball hard. His exit velocity was among the tops in the league. He was hitting the ball on the ground too much, and he actively went to, change what they would call your launch angle to try to hit the ball in the air. Well, now, and I think that was his seventh home run last night.
Correct.
I don't think he hit his seventh homer until June last year. If he is not just what he was last year, which was one of the worst offensive players in the game, if he is his career year, which is, his
regular career year, yes.
Yeah, regular year at 280, 25 homers, and 90 RBIs.
Fabulous.
That fundamentally changes that whole lineup. It just lengthens it, and he's a threat. And now, when you walk Harper, and he's getting on base 50% of the time right now. Now when you walk Harper, that's a problem. And now do you think, well, do I want to walk Harper? Well, that's a problem for you. So it's hard to kind of articulate how one guy transforming transform the whole lineup, but it really does.
All right, enjoy yourself. We'll talk to you during all of these series, and we'll bring. Why don't you come in here and sit down with us occasionally?
If we can work it out, I'll absolutely.
Because we're gonna go to the podcast studio starting Monday.
We can talk Twitter beefs.
We're gonna go to Chatter on Monday. Yes, I've got to do. I've got to stop people from answering the phone saying Chad's Friendship Heights. Just answer Chatter, and I told somebody last night, just take the sign down at the front. Just take it down, smash it, get it out of here. Even if there is no sign. I don't care.
Just buy a bulldozer. Just knock it down.
Get rid of it.
What's the parking situation over there?
Fabulous. If you take an Uber or if you're me. Yeah, park anywhere you want in the city and take an Uber. I'll talk to you soon. Barry's for Luga, boys and girls. We will come back with news. And Nigel, I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Life insurance, do you have it? If you don't, why not? It's too expensive. It's a hassle. I didn't have life insurance for a long time, and I got life insurance within the last 6 or 7 years because I just sort of found out I probably wouldn't live forever. I mean, I assumed I would live forever for a long time, but now I realize I won't. I want to make sure that everybody who I leave behind has stuff. If you don't have life insurance, what would financially happen if something happened to the primary earner? I wasn't the primary earner. I was the only earner. Okay, not primary, only. Life insurance is a good idea to protect the ones around you, but where do you go for the best prices on the best policy with the best service? PolicyGenius.com is the best online life insurance marketplace. It gives you the most accurate quotes from the top A-rated life insurance companies. PolicyGenius has placed over $5 billion in life insurances for people like you, and PolicyGenius has a very simple, user-friendly website to shop and compare all the top-rated life insurance companies and give you the best options. They have a licensed customer service team to help you find the best policy at the best price. And while you're there, check out their other insurance offerings like health insurance and pet insurance. Pet insurance. This dog is costing me millions. I should probably get that. Go to PolicyGenius.com today to save over 40% off other prices for life insurance. When life insurers compete for your business, you save money. That is policygenius.com, PolicyGenius. If you can't spell genius, you're not one. Zero jargon, zero sales pressure, zero hassle. Life insurance made easy, free quotes, zero hassle, peace of mind. Don't wait. Go to policygenius.com today. This comes from James Britton, who represents the Washington, D.C.-based band Throwing Plates. There are two songs he sent us, Dirty Lies and Whiskey and Life is Like a Limousine, off the debut album. Which one is this?
This is Life is Like a Limousine.
Life is, and it should be.
Yes. I think we played the other one before.
I think they sent us a DVD, a CD. I think CDs. They sent us some music.
They may have, yes. Yeah.
So, Michael, if people want to send us their music to play, how do they go about it?
They can continue to send it to jingles@tonycornizershow.com.
And if they want to buy gear?
Shop.tonycornizershow.com, where loyal little Rob Kolpian from the Order Fulfillment Group says that with the new discount code, a lot of hats and sweatshirts are still moving.
So that's really good.
Wow.
You know. Have we got any Greek yogurt for Liz?
We have no Greek yogurt, but I will work on that. Yeah. Coffee-flavored, if I remember correctly.
It's a category of sponsorship that I think you should pursue.
Greek yogurt. What is Greek yogurt, by the way? What is that?
I can't tell you, like, philosophical yogurt, in terms of how it's made, what makes a difference, but it's just very creamy and thick, and it's not sweet. It's not, even the fruit things, it's not like you're eating grape jelly or something.
Okay, so when I was young, and I don't eat yogurt.
Or Icelandic yogurt.
I have a Wikipedia explanation if it matters.
When you were young. By saying when I was young, there was one yogurt and one yogurt only. It was Danone yogurt.
Yep.
They advertised Danone yogurt. At first, there was no fruit in it. Then they put fruit, I think, at the bottom or whatever.
And you stir it.
And I watched people eat yogurt, and it made me sick just to watch them. I've never eaten yogurt. I mean, to my knowledge.
I probably have
eaten yogurt in something. Within the last 3 or 4 years, this Greek yogurt became just a bonanza for yogurt people. What does it say in there?
I think it's marketing mumbo jumbo. It's Greek yogurt or strained yogurt is yogurt that has been strained to remove its whey, resulting in a thicker consistency
than unstrained
yogurt, while preserving its distinctive sour taste.
Sour, is that
so? It's been strained for a sort of thicker consistency.
Thank you for the behind the scenes secret. But it also it's not heavily sugared up or tarted up.
Yeah, it's got and, protein.
And it's in terms of nutritional value, it has a very high protein calcium count and not many carbs.
Yes,
fewer carbs because it's not covered in sugar.
Yes, it says in Europe and North America, it's often made with low fat or fat free yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
but don't sleep on the Icelandic yogurt.
What is Skier? That? What is
Skier?
That?
Skier?
Skier or right. Siggy's? It has the
same,
similar appeal.
Same deal.
Do they take it right from the volcanoes? Do they take it from the sides of the volcanoes? The yogurt machine.
We should just do a blind taste.
So, what yogurt did you enjoy before the Chobani craze?
I never ate Chobani. Okay. Oh, you're saying that's
before the whole
ushered
Greek
in
yogurt.
The Fahe. See, to me, Fahe yogurt is kind of a go-to, but probably Danone, but always a non-sugar or, without because of the diabetes.
I love that Danone.
I don't like the fake sugar.
Here is my question. Has yogurt become to...
It's a Greek yogurt Tuesday.
Your ill.
I know. Your readers are defecting in droves.
We have no readers here.
Yeah. I mean, a listener.
No.
I'm so retro.
What happened to you? Something of consequence happened about 20 years ago, maybe a little bit less, maybe 15 years ago, to the United States car industry. People stopped buying the staples. I know that Ford outsells all the others. I know that Ford and Chevy still sell a lot. But the foreign car market became huge in America. And in terms of status and how you viewed yourself, if you made a certain amount of money or felt you were going up the ladder, you would reach out to, let's say, Infiniti or Lexus or Mercedes-Benz. Foreign, they may be manufactured here, but they are foreign-owned companies. Are we seeing in yogurt now that same thing happen, the status orientation of yogurt with Icelandic or Greek? You're shaking your head.
I'm making your connection. I know what you're saying. But no, because it's a different product. It's made differently. It tastes differently. The texture
is different. Does Danone have to go chase them?
The nutritional. I think they have. I think they have some little spinoff that...
My guess is that, 2 or 3 multinationals own every yogurt in the world. That'd be my guess.
Like sunglasses.
Yeah.
Yeah. All sunglasses are owned by three people.
No, it's not a status thing. No, there's a a big difference. Well, maybe for some people, but not for me. I mean, my life is like reading nutritional...
I understand, but you don't think that people... You don't think that there's a conscious effort among some consumers to get the trendy Greek yogurt because it sets them apart from their neighbors? You don't think that's possible?
It's possible. I thought you
Whole
were
Foods
asking
effect.
About,
it's called.
You know, the truth on the merits. Is it just that? Is that why you would choose it? Would you choose it for status reasons only?
No, there's
I'm
definite
not speaking
difference.
For the average consumer with a grocery cart.
Okay.
There's no telling how the many ways in which they're duped and bamboozled.
But there is, Liz, a definite difference in the taste and quality and stuff, in your opinion. Yeah, it's not like they're all the same. It's just,
no.
I didn't know it.
No, and that it's much better for you because you get more protein for fewer carbs.
The Turkish businessman who owns Chobani is worth nearly $2 billion.
I'm going to read you, and then we'll get to the news in a second. I'm
is
going
the yogurt segment over?
Yogurt segment is over.
You younger than me, almost. Too, by the way.
I'm going to read a small headline in the paper today, which I think will tell you everything you need to know about the mass transit system in Washington, D.C. This is the exact words. Fewer track fires on Metro so far this year.
Win.
So far.
Fewer track fires on Metro so far this year.
Still early.
Lots of fires, but fewer. But lots of fires. We haven't stopped the fires,
right. Oh my God.
But we have fewer than we had last
really
year.
Funny.
That is an actual headline.
Well, that's a win, isn't it?
The agency logged 20 significant fire incidents in the first 3 months of 2017.
Down from
a
what?
A 26% decrease from the same period last year. When there were 27 significant track fires. To me, when you open the system, when you open a subway system, you should never have to worry that it is going to catch fire.
Right.
And the fact that it's fewer than last year, but still what seems to me an inordinately high number
implying that
of track
it's
fires.
It's within the acceptable range.
That's okay, yeah. Hey, it's fewer than last year, so just get on there and burn.
Multiple.
Odds are you won't die. Chances are.
I
track
like
fires,
bus.
Multiple.
Yes.
Unbelievable. That's a great headline. I saw that. I really enjoyed that. What else?
Today's newscast, by the way, is brought to you by North Korean yogurt. That's right. The best money that yogurt can buy. Eat it or else.
Right.
Can I just share one more yogurt fact? Because this is quite fascinating. You're talking about the growth.
Do you eat yogurt?
My kids love yogurt.
Do you eat it?
Not really anymore.
Do you eat it?
I went through a yogurt phase, but I'm off that now.
I don't.
Do you? Well, I've got a trainer, and he's like, "You got to change your diet a little bit." So I eat the Greek yogurt.
Do is early flight or train out of town. I'll grab the yogurt parfait as a breakfast thing.
I would see people eat it and be like,
"Look at me, Liz.
This looks disgusting.
Disgusting,
right? But
it's
now,
disgusting.
Yeah, so now I become what I despise."
So I'm reading about this Hamdi Yulukaya, the Turkish guy, 44-year-old who founded Chobani Yogurt, Greek style yogurt. Had a less than 1% share of the yogurt market in 2007. By 2013, it was more than 50%.
Wow.
So in 6 years, it went from no one ever hearing
and
of it.
And he's at the vanguard.
To being the majority.
Of it. He's lying in his pockets.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yep. Not just his pockets. He announced about a year ago today that he would give his employees 10% of the shares in his company.
Good for him.
So that's
give
pretty
it back
cool.
to
good
people.
For him.
Good, yeah. That is
good
lovely.
For him.
By the way, before I get started in the news proper,
Are you sure you want to do that? There's so much more here.
There is a lot of yogurt stuff that we want to get to, but I would like to acknowledge.
Scroll down that wiki page.
I'm never being invited back on this show.
I would like to acknowledge that today is Anzac Day for our listeners in New Zealand and Australia.
That's great.
For those who are not familiar with it in your United States, it's like the Memorial Day
that's
for those
right.
that served and fell. So
that's right.
We thank you guys for that.
Yep.
Adrian Peterson. When the Saints go marching
How
in,
about that?
It's like he will be going to New Orleans, sign a 2-year deal with a base of total value of $7 million. He's going to get $3.5 million, all guaranteed at signing for this year to play for the Saints.
Okay, you can notice.
Can he play defense? Otherwise, who cares?
Yeah, it's not
going to help
my
him.
Thought. Yeah.
You can notice my skepticism on this.
Yes.
Adrian Peterson is a first ballot Hall of Fame guy. Just 2 years ago, when he was healthy, he led the league in rushing.
Yes.
And he's getting $3.5 million, and that's all?
That's it.
That's it? Adrian Peterson?
He was guaranteed. Wow. Well, his contract for the Vikings was $18 million. And they said, well, we can't pay that.
$3.5 million.
Not a lot of suitors.
And what I would ask is...
No, not at all.
Because
not at all.
The big thing with the Patriots was, because he was rumored to be going to the Patriots at one point, they said, well, they won't pay him enough money. And they talked about numbers like $3 or $4 million. So the fact that it is those numbers, I'm surprised. Maybe they looked at him and said, yeah, we don't think you have anything left in the tank.
Substitutes on the Washington Redskins are earning much more than $3.5 million in various places. That's amazing to me. He has fallen. He's just fallen.
Yeah.
That could be a great deal for them because one of the things, and I understand what you're saying about defense, but one of the things they have lacked is a running back to pose any sort of threat to a defense so that Drew Brees doesn't have to pass 60 times.
Well, yeah, they can't run out the clock.
Yeah.
Or they haven't been able to.
Yeah, right.
Staying with the NFL, the draft is this Thursday. Michigan's Jabril Peppers, who was rumored to be like maybe the 15th pick overall, has now tested positive for a dilute sample at the scouting combine, which means that it can be an indication that somebody tried to flood the system with water to eliminate.
It can be an indication, but what it is an indication of is that you're not getting a true test from the urine sample because it is so diluted. Now, how does one just, as you are taking a sample, do you just take a bottle of water and throw it into the beaker, or what do you do?
You drink a lot of water to try and flush your system.
Yes.
So what he
said
was...
Don't most people think that drinking a lot of water is good for you, right? Drinking water is good.
Being hydrated is always good.
Is good.
But I think it takes... not to impugn a motive here, but it almost takes a conscious effort to just drink.
Yes,
extreme amount in order to dilute.
Might include intravenous fluids.
So does this? Right? So what?
Not just chugging water.
Is the suspicion that it would mask some sort of steroid or marijuana or something like that?
Could be either.
Right. So nobody's
the whole thing.
Nobody's specifically saying which one they believe it might be.
Liz, does it hurt him in the draft?
For sure. Yeah. I mean,
you think he'll drop?
I'm not sure he was a top 15 pick. I would say maybe he was probably started out as a little later first round pick, kind of neither here nor there. I think it would hurt. I mean, there's a whole cluster of guys with red flag issues. He's not the only one with the diluted sample. There are some others with domestic violence issues, otherwise first round talents who have this character question or mark against them. In this case, I think it'll hurt him a little bit. And because ultimately it speaks to your judgment, knowing that this window for testing your whole career depends on it. How do you not take every precaution to ensure that this is not going to raise an issue? Now, in his defense, I believe he has said, I was not well. I had a stomach virus. I had this virus. That's an understandable response if that's the case. So do you buy that? Do you think, this is not a straightforward, smart, responsible guy that you're going to invest a lot of money in?
I will give you two names of people who famously dropped. Now, they didn't drop all the way, but they dropped a lot. Dan Marino was one of them, and Warren Sapp is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And they dropped precipitously in the first round when their year was up, and they're both the last time I looked in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Didn't Moss drop as well?
Moss did
Randy
as well.
Moss, and he's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
By the way,
terrific broadcaster. Yeah,
statement from his rep. Peppers went to the combine. He was sick after flying there from San Diego. He has a history of cramping. Peppers was being pumped with fluids, drinking 8 to 10 bottles of water before he went to bed. And I would add parenthetically, it's going to make for a kind of a restless night in my house anyway. because he was the first guy to work out 2 days for the linebackers and defensive backs, he had to go through that the first day, come back on the second day, and that was the fear. So Peppers was pounding water and under the weather. He's never failed a drug test in his life, nor tested positive before for any substance.
I'm glad you read that statement. That's good. In fairness.
Do you have anything else?
Do you want to talk about Eric Thames? Do we have time for that?
Yes, sure.
Or Eric Thames, as we like to call him in England, Eric Thames of the Milwaukee Brewers, who has seemingly come out of nowhere. He was playing in the Korean League.
3 years in the Korean League, supposedly because he had trouble with the curb.
Yes, was an MVP. I was a 40-40 member over there, hit for the cycle twice. Now he's with the Brewers, and he has 10 home runs, and it is April 25th, including 7 against the Reds or something like that.
And the Cubs have implied that he's on steroids.
Yes.
They do wink, wink, nod, nod whenever they talk about him.
Yes, they do.
And for those people who are invested in metaphysical clues, The last Milwaukee Brewer to have 10 home runs in April was Ryan Braun,
Uncle Ryan.
Who famously then went down on steroids and things like that and pleaded basically no contest and just said, I'll take the suspension. So part of this, of course, is how can this guy be this good because he played in Korea for 3 years? But what if he is this good? And what if he is this good? Now, pitchers and managers will figure out how to get him out, but he's great so far.
Right. Yeah, he could just be having a killer month.
The Cubs just came right out. The pitchers just came right out.
Oh, yeah, they were like, oh, yeah, there's no way this is real.
Right.
That's harsh.
Right. So, all right, are we good on that?
Yes.
All right, so we'll come back with Old Guy Radio. And in Old Guy Radio, we're going to talk to Liz Clark about the upcoming draft. I mean, the particulars about the Washington Redskins, but anything else she has to say about the draft overall, including what she thinks the Cleveland Browns will do with the overall number one pick. And she's looking at me like, I don't know that I'm prepared for that, but I have a couple of minutes. I have a couple of minutes. So it'll be okay. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here's the SeatGeek ad. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be way too complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. If that $50 thing exists on the Washington Valor with all you can eat and drink, you ought to be able to get that, right?
Yeah, I would
look for it.
Isn't that something that they would do?
Absolutely. Yeah.
SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, listeners to this podcast get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. You just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Tony today. That's promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I didn't know this. I just always thought this was sports. So you can get Broadway tickets?
Sure, concerts.
You can do that like day of. You can say what's available?
Yes, absolutely.
I didn't realize that. I mean, I really didn't. So I'm learning as we all learn. It's good.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Liz is listening intently because this is for her.
I'm like the dog with that special range of hearing that was in a shopping mall, in an elevator. I'll be quiet.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Bruce Springsteen. Liz has been to more than 10 Bruce Springsteen concerts. Oh. How many more than 10 have you been to?
300.
Well over a factor of 10.
Yeah. So it's... Is he still touring as much as he used to tour?
Yeah.
He's out there all the time?
Yeah. He's been overseas a lot the last...
I do remember the one Bruce show that I got to see with you, thanks to you.
Yes!
We saw Liz before and she said, what would you like to hear? And I said, I really want to hear She's the One. He said, well, it's probably not going to happen. And he did play it that night.
Yes, he did. Brilliant. And I was so happy for you.
Yes, I was thrilled. It was lovely.
I had heard it before.
This is from the Born to Run album?
Yeah.
And the B-side to 10th Avenue Freeze-Out, I believe.
Fantastic.
Was it a single?
Yeah, it was released at the B-side.
It's a fantastic
song.
It really is.
Lot of Bo Diddley sort of beat to it.
I'm going
to
ask Liz a bunch of questions, but before we do that, there's science is not my deal, as people know, because I could not pass science courses in either high school or college, and almost...
You did pass there.
I passed one, almost didn't get out of college as a result, but that will be the subject of my speech as I become Dr. Tony Kornheiser. In any case, there's a great... Here's... A headline in a story today that's almost as good as fewer fires reported on Metro so far this year. The headline is, scientists find caterpillars that can digest plastic. And it starts, shopping bags are an infamous sort of plastic pollution. They are persistent. Bags at a dump can last for an estimated 1,000 years. And they are pernicious. A wild baby manatee named Emoji died in a Florida zoo in February after filling its guts with plastic bags and other litter. So one of the things you want to do is get rid of plastic in some way. There's an island of plastic floating in the Pacific Ocean as big as Tennessee or something.
I think Texas, maybe.
Yeah.
But something it's gigantic.
Something so unbelievable. And it's just plastic. Well, now...
Some hash browns in there, too.
Now... there is a Federica Bertaccini, a biologist at Spain's Institute of Biomedicine and Biotechnology of Cantabria and a hobbyist beekeeper, has been experimenting with plastic.
You do a lot of beekeeping as well.
I do not. But once, he or she has found, it doesn't say.
She.
Federica?
Frederica. Maybe, but it doesn't say in any of the references. In any case, there are caterpillars that are digesting plastic. So we need to breed these caterpillars, and we need to put them all over the place and get rid of the plastic problem.
Well, not a good idea.
It's not?
What they said, will they take over the world?
Yeah.
We breed one gigantic one. Everything. No, what they talked about in this, because they were eating their way through her beehive, because they're called waxworms. Then she plucked them and put them in a plastic bag to sort of
and
isolate.
And they ate the plastic.
And then they were all over the place.
They have a taste for plastic.
Yes.
This is good plastic.
It's like when an animal tastes blood.
Exactly.
It's like Greek plastic. It's better than the other.
More protein.
Better than Danone plastic.
What they say is they want to isolate whatever the enzyme is in the caterpillars.
And use that to dissolve.
And then use that to dissolve all the plastic.
But it wouldn't necessarily create big dogs with that. We'd just use the enzyme. We would just make that.
So learn from the animal kingdom. Don't like disrupt
this
it
is why
by
you
overbreeding.
And then work to eradicate the caterpillar so we would have a monopoly on the enzyme.
Exactly.
I think is the
fantastic.
Way to go.
But this is why you and I are not science people, because that was my first thought too. It was like, we'll just drop thousands of caterpillars on
Right. One of the
Does it get along with the stink bug?
Right. One of the things that I will say in my speech, for those of you who are not going to hear it, which is 99.99% of you, is I'm going to say that I went to this doctor, Dr. Shelley Hackett, who taught biology for non-science majors, and I explained to her that I'm not a science person, and I promised her that if she would pass me in this course, I wouldn't even watch Bill Nye, the science guy. I would basically become a druid. I'd become so anti-science. So anyway. All right, Liz is here. The draft is Thursday. From a local interest for us, the Washington Redskins enter the draft without a general manager. This is insane. There is no other way to put this. The general manager's job on every team in the league is to identify talent, specific talent to the needs that that team has. It's the most important. The draft day is the most important day in the full year cycle of a general manager, and the Washington Redskins don't have one.
It is surreal. It's very hard to get your head around that. And the second most important day to an NFL GM is the NFL Combine, which is like finishing school for the draft. And Scott McLuhan was employed at that point by the Redskins,
but not allowed to go. Wasn't allowed to go. Let me repeat that. He wasn't allowed to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not just that he's not filling the job now. It's the critical months in the run-up. He was not, working for the team.
This is like going up to bat with a blindfold on, and you can't see the pitches. This is so crazy. Well, what do their draft boards look like?
Well, I don't know. I will tell you what they say, and, those familiar with the Redskins can take or leave or parse it as they choose. So what the team is saying is that they are extremely well prepared for this draft. They have not missed a beat. There is, in fact, a scouting department that is sort of specialized in evaluating college players. There's a pro division for free agent signings.
Sure.
These people have been in the scouting department for several years. The head of college scouting for the Redskins is, I believe, going into his 16th year with the Redskins. So no one has been named interim GM. They've chosen not to go that route. So there is no GM. But this director of college scouting is the one who gave the press conference yesterday at Redskins Park, the annual pre-draft press conference. And I also must say, in 2014, before Scott McLuhan was brought in as GM, what they basically have now is that same structure as handled the 2014 draft, where you have Dan Snyder, Bruce Allen, the team president, and the scouting department. That's what's in place now. That's what's was in place in 2014 before Scott was brought in to be the overall keeper of the roster. The 2014 draft went pretty well by Redskins standards. I mean, they have four starters from that draft, including, you know, right tackle, cornerback, center, linebacker. So it wasn't a disaster. So you just, whether you believe them or not that they haven't missed a beat, I don't know. I mean, the report card will come. There'll be an interim report card the day after the draft. That's rarely the real report card.
That's
because
right.
some
That's
players
right.
take a year or two to develop. But they're at least putting forth a face that everything's well in hand, and these preparations for building their board have been months in the making, so nothing's gone wildly off the rails. They have 10 picks, which you got to credit Scott McLuhan. That's one of the things he did, is get more picks. Everybody wants more than 7 picks. They have 10 to work with. It's a defensive heavy – it's heavy with defensive talent, this draft class. That is where the Redskins need the most
help.
That's
what they need.
So it plays in their favor. I guess what I'm saying is, if you have 10 picks, your need is defense, and you're going into a class loaded with defensive talent, you're an abject moron, if you can't help yourself with this draft. So there's every reason to expect they'll do well in the draft.
Who will be the face of this? Who will get
That's
out
a
there
really good question.
And who will get out there and say, this is why we picked this fellow instead of this fellow?
You know, I would hope and expect. Okay, so the team doesn't do its sort of victory speech or put the bow on what they did and why they did it until it's all over. So it won't be until Saturday that the team trots out someone to explain why they did what they did and how great it is. I would hope and expect that's Bruce Allen, the team president. I kind of thought Bruce Allen would do the press conference yesterday, but instead they chose the director of college scouting, which is fine, their choice. So it'll be one of the two, either the Scott Campbell, the director of college scouting, or Bruce Allen. And then, of course, they'll trot out usually the top three players in the draft, your first, second, and third
round. So they won't make any comment after Thursday night in a first-round selection?
If I'm remembering correctly, no. There's no official word from the team. But you do, as a reporter, have access to the players who talk about, gee, I had no idea I was in their sights, or I knew they were looking at me, or, they spin their personal narrative.
Okay. So, again, they've been operating. Now, maybe they have total operations from the top down. They're just missing the top. And this happens in a transition period where you elect Donald Trump and you go from Barack Obama to Donald Trump, and the ambassador to X country resigns. All the permanent people are still there. And so
the relationship
is maintained. But I would ask, how have they done so far in free agent signing without a titular general manager?
That's a really good question. I mean, oddly, I'd have to give them a bit of credit for not losing their mind. I mean, I think a longtime Redskins fan would say, thank God there's not these backbreaking, preposterous free agent signings like Haynesworth, Bruce Smith, Dion.
Yeah, the famous
they
people.
Haven't. So it's been restrained. It's been restrained. They did address the defensive line. They got two defensive tackles that makes sense, that with a good track record and reasonable contracts. So if you make the decision, you're going to let go your top two receivers, DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon, which they did. You're giving up out of the gate 2,000 receiving yards. I think most people were thinking they'd lose one or the other, not both. They took a crack at addressing the receiving corps.
They got Terrell Pryor.
Yeah.
Who was a college
dynamic quarterback. He's also 6'4".
He's big
And
kid.
Then they brought in another wide receiver who's 6'3". So they're addressing the needed receiver, and they're also addressing what has been obvious, that they're too short. They don't have any big receivers that can help you in the red zone. And as we know, the story of the Redskins the last 2 years is just tremendous numbers on offense, a very productive offense that basically goes nowhere, you know, that stalls or dies in the red zone, whether because they don't have the bodies to bring the touchdowns home or the play calling has been so transparent and easily telegraphed, it's easy to defend.
So let me get to the last question because you go to the offense at that point. Kirk Cousins is apparently talking to anybody who asks him a question. You can call Kirk Cousins and he'll do 40 minutes for you. And all of the reports indicate the same thing. Kirk Cousins is saying, I would be happy to sign here if they gave me a number I wanted. That's the easiest out in the world. There's because in his head, maybe there's no number that he wants and he won't sign with the Washington Redskins. But he keeps talking about staying if the offer is good. Do you believe him?
You know, I've not found him a con artist or a, you know, somebody who, you know, it plays games very much. My instinct is that he's not thrilled about signing his long-term future with this team, with tying his long-term future with this team because of the history of instability. And remember, he sat on the bench for a long time. So he has seen the way this team operates, the turnover with coordinators, with head coaches, the general churn, the drama. And I think he'd love to go, A, to a stable franchise, and I'm sure he'd love, as he said quite clearly, love to play for a team that wants him, that believes in him. And on many, many levels, this team has never said or even telegraphed that it wants or believes in him. A, by offering him $16 million last year when $20 million was where the conversation should have started, never coming off that, going with the tag last year. Right now, they're still at that same pattern, just add four. You know, it should start at $24 million. The Skins, last I heard, are at $20 million. So that gap is pretty big. I'm not freaking out. The deadline for getting this done is not till July 15th. So when people say, why don't they sign him? Why don't they sign him?
Well, they don't have to.
You know, they need to sign him July 14th. You know, that's when it will get interesting, unless there's going to be a trade in the next 72 hours, which I'm not seeing. So I think you can say I would play for the Skins if they pay me what I'm worth. You almost know they're not going to do that. They're not. There's no evidence to say that they believe in him that much. Or, you know, I think the Redskins are kind of operating from the point of view, he should be grateful to us. You know, we've made this guy, and he's a nice guy. You know, he should want to play for us for this amount of money. And I'm not even talking about what's guaranteed. I think there's a big gulf in what you'd expect to be guaranteed for a quarterback and what they're offering. And then furthermore, we're leaving out the equation of how desperate many, many NFL teams are for a quarterback. And they're not desperate for a Tom Brady. Many teams are desperate for a competent, responsible, capable, better than serviceable, but maybe not a Hall of Famer. I mean, there's a big market for that kind of guy who can run a particular offense. And Kirk could do well by a lot of NFL teams.
Thank you, Liz.
You're welcome.
We will take a break. We will come back with a jingle and with some email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
John Fitzpatrick, Arlington, Virginia. These are the Rolling Stones, the last time.
Well, I'll tap last once, but I won't tap twice. So you better give me back my old device. I'm expecting you to try real hard to please me. I want last channel to be more easy.
Should be.
Xfinity wastes all my time. I'm surely running short on time. Can't be much more time before I go. Oh no. Oh no.
It's the same problem. You get last channel and then you have to hit something else, and then the screen goes dark for at least a second. It's not as good.
Have you tried the voice-activated thing where you just scream representative into it?
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thank you to Barry Zwerluga of the Washington Post for coming on the show today. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, SeatGeek, Policy Genius, and Harry's Razor. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Yesterday, on the end of the PTI show, I was told by some of the people in the crew there was no iTunes anymore, that everything was Apple something or other anymore, and there's no more iTunes. Can you speak to this issue?
iTunes does exist. I know that.
Still seems to exist on my platforms.
Yeah.
Well, the guys in the crew were saying everything is Apple.
Maybe they're rebranding it or something?
Well, I mean, iTunes is Apple, but iTunes
is just... I'm telling you what happened.
All right.
I don't know this for a fact. I know what I was told.
I'll come in there and yell at them today.
Well, you don't have to
yell at them. You remember what you're told.
I do, and I know what I say. From Clarence Strahan, I've been a fan of your show since the days of the ESPN Zone in Washington, where I tried many times to catch you live when I was assigned to temporary details with the Department of Justice. I retired in 2013 from the U.S. Marshals. I've been a security consultant for the USGA, beginning at Marion that summer. This year, I'll be at Erin Hills. On a recent episode, you mentioned your meeting of Robert Trent Jones, Jr. Last year at Oakmont, I was meeting my son, he was interning at the time, at the USGA hospitality tent for lunch. My colleagues were at a full table, and I asked a distinguished-looking gentleman if my son and I could join him. I peeked at his credential, and it was Robert Trent Jones, Jr. During lunch, we discussed my work, my son's major, and, of course, his life. He was engaging, kind, and a joy to talk to. He mentioned his poetry and showed us a large, spiral-bound book of his poems, the Yale golf team, his courses in Japan, Scandinavia, the first-ever course in Russia, and numerous U.S. courses. When we left, he graciously took pictures and signed and gave us his book. What an experience. Just wanted to let you know he is just as accommodating to the little man as he was to you. I live near Savannah, and I work two other PGA Tour events and the PGA Championship this year. So next time you're visiting Michael's in-laws, let's play. Keep up the good work.
That's nice.
Clarence Strahan, very, very nice. Clayton DeGaynor in Battle Creek, Michigan, where all the serial killers come from. C-E-R-E-A-L. My wife's birthday isn't until November 27th. However, if you give me your phone number, I'll be more than happy to call you and let you know how she is on the day of her birthday.
Seems reasonable.
Some other birthdays to note are my nephew's, which is June 9th. My niece is December 18th. And, of course, mine's December 15th. If you'd like, I can call you on each one of those days as well. My parents' birthdays have already passed this year. I may be able to call you on them next year, but I'm not ready to commit yet. From Mike in Burke, Virginia. My next birthday is January 26, 2018. What time should I expect your call? From Andrew Cheever, signed Cheeve in Somerville, Massachusetts. More disappointing performance. Paul George going 2 for 32 in crunch time, or Mr. Tony going 0 for 2 on phone calls from his children or on his daughter-in-law's birthday?
I think the latter on that one.
You know.
Soul crushing.
Neil in Winston-Salem.
Still looking at me.
Larry.
Neil Allerton in Winston-Salem. After Sunday, Michael can now compare himself to the great Buck Showalter, and Tony is still waiting on the call like Zach Britton. Just have to wonder if this lapse in judgment will haunt Michael for the rest of his career. From Steve Clemenson in Edgewater, Maryland. All day long, my dog wanted in and out of the house. After a while, I got tired of this happening. She came to the glass door, one last banging on the door to come in. Instead of getting up to let her in, I just said to her, thumbs, Penny, thumbs. Don't you wish you had thumbs? And I went back to watching TV. You know what? As my daughter-in-law, who used to like me before she didn't call me on her own birthday, says all the time, put the dog outside. Dogs like to be outside.
Yeah.
Your dog does not like to be outside?
Not by himself.
Jack doesn't
like if I go with him.
Yes.
She said that before she poisoned your own son against you?
Or after? Robert Craig in Clear Spring, Maryland. Love Chatter is the restaurant name. You should let Jeannie know that Mitzi's is already taken.
Oh, well,
it's
there
an
you go.
Exotic dancer club in Hagerstown. So eat
Boom.
It, McManus.
Yeah, I think I'll
it's
do that.
Sounds glorious.
It does.
Tim Cree in Fort Collins, Colorado. In review of Tony's stories that his father would refuse to turn up the air conditioning because he was too cheap to pay for it, my grandfather was the opposite. They lived in Central Valley, California in Visalia, and their house was also nice and cool the minute you stepped inside his, quote, I'll sit in a house with no furniture and eat beans for every meal before I turn off that air conditioner. You gotta love Grandpa Cray, a Purple Heart World War II vet. I miss him in that sense of humor all the time. Do we have any time?
You've really got about 7 seconds.
It's just not enough.
Never
we'll get
is.
To these others at some other point. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Come on, man. What are you doing out here, man?
snoring while I'm up here soaring. I'm high than Scott Weiland when STP was still touring. Not Scott Stapp, stop that. Eddie Vedder wants his voice back. Nothing is original anymore, especially when you force tracks. Like horse tracks, you just stay the same. Repeating yourself constantly to find others to blame. That's just something you're gonna learn about me. Head flip backwards, exorcism, turn around and see like Reagan, not Ronald. Ducks, not Donald. Fondle, no condoms. Kiss, no problem. Kiss, no problem. Kiss, no problem. Kiss, no problem. Not like Sandusky telling children to trust me. Let's take a shower so you aren't so musky. Let's not forget, remember, don't tell your parents. With arrogance he takes advantage. One always aware girls being careless and calling off fairness. For the hairless fetish to the absolutely cherished. Now the parents are embarrassed and is wrecking perfect marriages. Putting fear in people like it's an armed terrorist. Guess it's gonna suck burning in that inferno. Please don't learn to moonwalk or reunite with Joe Paterno. Now I bet you wish you were a lot more thorough. Maybe burning in hell will be your lesson to unlearn though. Your lesson to unlearn though. Your lessons on Marino. Your lessons on Marino. Your lessons on Marino. What's the matter, kids? You don't like clowns? Or the sounds coming out of my mouth because I'm not brown? Well, let's flip that frown because it's upside down. And then we're gonna have to turn it right back around. Cause I'm not rapping for children. This ain't Christmas. This isn't a holiday for all you Christians to give gifts and pretend you're gonna witness a miracle that's lyrical. You're all on my shit list. You're all on my shit list. You're all on my shit list. You're all on my shit list.
Legitimacy, and I've been trying.